This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, boys and girls? It's me, Jason McIntyre. Straight Fire for Monday, July 26th. Hope everybody had a phenomenal weekend. Mine was so action-packed that Sunday afternoon, I laid down to start doing some more football reading, previewing the upcoming season, and I fell asleep. And I woke up, and it was 2 hours later. Just an exhausting weekend. Yes, I'll talk about the tennis tournament. If you guys follow me on the gram, you already know what happened. It's a sore subject, but we will talk about it. Obviously, we've got a ton of sports news coming off the weekend. Team USA losing to France. If you play it back, I think 2 weeks ago, right after the loss to, I think it was Australia, I said, France, 16.5. I bet it instantly. I told you guys to bet it. France was getting 16.5, and they won on Sunday morning. Crazy result. We'll talk about that. Some NBA scuttlebutt. It's draft week, so there's going to be some Bradley Beal chatter. But the big news is Jay Billis stops by. He does the draft for ESPN. You guys are going to love Jay Billis. He came on, I believe it was during the Final Four, right before Gonzaga-Baylor in the national championship. Maybe it was the Monday of the game. I'm not sure, but Jay Billis is great. I've known him for a while. I actually, way back, maybe 13 years ago, I pitched ESPN, let me do a profile of Jay Billis for this website, The Big Lead, that I work for. And so I went into New York City, hung out with Jay Billis and Bill Raftery at the then Big East tournament. And it was awesome. People noticing Raftery on the street. Billis just fun, insightful, watch video together. He breaks down plays. Billis is a great guy. He thinks this is the best draft since the 2003 draft. I mean, I know it's loaded. I didn't know it was that good. So we'll get to that. But first, I just wanted to open a couple things. First of all, I have to start with this Team USA loss. Because you remember how we had Joe Vardon on from The Athletic? He's the one who got into it with Popovich. So he is in Japan covering the Olympics. And he's there with Team USA. After the game, Vardon, I guess either following players in the locker room or overheard or whatever. But he said players were grumbling about running the San Antonio offense. Yikes! That's after game one! Now, listen, this may have been, I don't want to say it's taken out of context. Vardon, a good reporter, he's covered the league for a while. You have to wonder, given the meltdown, because again, Team USA led almost throughout the game. They led by 10 at one point. They led by 7 with like 3 minutes left, 4 minutes left. They look fine. They're going to win the game. And then, of course, just choke city, and France executes better down the stretch. They ran the same inbounds play twice, resulting in threes. And bing, bang, boom, the USA has now lost 3 of their last 4 games. Team USA, 3 of their last 4. That's got to be the worst stretch in Team USA basketball history, or one of them. The 25-game win streak at the Olympics snapped. Their first Olympic loss since 2004. And what hurts is, you know, Damian Lillard was pretty awful and got pulled down the stretch. He had 2 turnovers, shot poorly. Kevin Durant, battle foul trouble, shot poorly. Dame and KD, probably the 2 best players on the team, right? Shot a combined 7 of 22. And when you look at who their best player was, folks, Drew Holiday was on a, won the championship with Milwaukee, was on the parade celebrating on, I believe it was Thursday. And then he gets on a plane to fly across the world, lands Saturday, and played in a game Sunday morning. What? Like, seriously? Drew Holiday had 12 points in the fourth quarter. He was huge. But obviously, listen, when you give up 28 points to Evan frickin' Fournier, 28! Fournier's a free agent, by the way. It's so funny, because I remember we specifically talked about on this pod, I liked it when the Celtics picked up Fournier. In his first game with Boston, I believe he was 0 for 12. And the Celtics fans hated him ever since. I'll get this guy out of town. He's trash. He can't make a shot. Evan Fournier, in these international games, and Damian Lillard kind of took a shot. He's like, you know, some of these guys, they don't play in the NBA like they do internationally. And I don't think he was talking about Gobert, but he had to be talking about Fournier, who was unbelievable. I don't want to say he's the best player on the court because he was not. He was maybe the best player on the court during the game against the USA, but just a devastating loss. We touch on it with Billis a little bit later. Not the way you want to start the Olympics. That being said, haven't seen a line for USA-Iran on Wednesday. I would like to back up the Brinks on USA. The line will probably be in the high 20s. I don't think it touches 30, but I can see the players, Popovich, really going hard at Iran to prove a point. Hey, we're not dead. We're not done. And then, of course, the big game against the Czech Republic to see if they advance out of group play. Now, if they don't advance out of group play, Popovic is done for sure. And there's going to be a whole cleaning house that will get ugly. But they should advance out of group play. All right. Besides Team USA basketball, I have to confess, I'm sorry, I did not do my patriotic duty and watch any Olympics. I did hear some friends who were really into it. You know, I played volleyball Sunday morning. I could play because I didn't get to the championship of the tennis tournament I entered. And a couple of the guys were like watching the surfing and they talked about the volleyball and like the USA's number one volleyball player tested positive for COVID. He'd been like working for 3 years toward this. Test positive. The backup comes in and USA volleyball wins their match against Italy. But the tennis tournament chewed up my Saturday. I'll get to it in a sec. And Sunday, you know, I had Saturday hoops with my daughter, Sunday hoops with my son, the aforementioned nap. and then, you know, I tried to like just chill out a little bit. I'm not kidding. The tennis tournament took a lot out of me. So here's the brief recap. Thursday night, play the first match. I win. It was tough. I win in two sets. But the guy was good. He was a lefty, wasn't totally ready for it. Just because he's a lefty. I thought he was the best player I played the opening match. I think I won 6-4, 7-5. So then I had to play Friday night against a kid. I show up and they're like, oh, yeah, there's a guy. I look at this kid. He's like this young kid. I'm like, what are you, like 25? He's like 22. I'm like, are you kidding me? I got to play a 22-year-old? And my buddy Dan, who listens to the pod all the time, shout out to Dan, showed up to support me. And this is what happens when you're playing in tennis tournaments. In warm-ups, guys look amazing. And this 22-year-old is hitting everything like hard. And I'm like, geez, I'm in trouble. This is going to suck. And I smoked him. I think it was 1-2, 6-1, 6-2. It was like easy. He just made a million mistakes. I played really solid, and he just hit everything long and wide. And, you know, he hadn't played in a lot of tournaments. So I beat him. So then the next match is Saturday morning, and I play against my buddy, who is the commissioner of my fantasy football league. And I know him, Thomas, this Asian guy, who's a really solid player. His strokes look good. He destroyed a guy on Friday night. And I'm playing Thomas, and, you know, we're warming up. And again, same deal. This guy's hitting a slice, backhand solid, two-handed backhands, pretty shot. And I'm like, oh, I'm in trouble. I was a little tired. Back-to-back days of tennis. Now there's a third straight day. And again, Thomas making a lot of mistakes. I go up 3-0. He comes back, and then I just rip his heart out with 3 straight and win 6-3. And you could see after the first set, he was a little deflated. And I think he was a little tired. You know, I'm not saying he's out of shape, but he's not in great shape. He's a dad. He's got better strokes than me, but I beat him in two sets. So then I had to play at 2 o'clock on Saturday. So you play at 9:30 and then 2. And at this point, I'm tired. I come home after watching my daughter's basketball game, and I'm tired. You know, I'm just gassed. And I try to rally. You know, I have this inversion table, which I recommend highly. You can get it off Amazon. They'll come in. The guy from Amazon will set it up in your garage for, you know, whatever it costs. It's so much easier than to do it yourself. I get on the inversion table. You go upside down. It stretches your back. You know, you get the little head rush. It's a good, like, wake up. And I'm playing this guy. And again, you know, this is my buddy Dan shows up. My wife, the kids are all there. And I'm playing this guy who said he only started playing 2 years ago, but he's like 32 years old. Again, super young. And out of the gate, I'm wrecking him. 4-1 lead. And I'm sitting here myself thinking, and this is bad to say, but this is reality when you're on the court. I'm like, I go up 4-1. I'm like, man, I couldn't even make the tennis team in high school. Imagine if I win this championship. That would be awesome. And I, you know, it's the nature of the beast, guys. If you've played sports, you start thinking ahead. And I go up 4-1. And, you know, it's hot. It was 75 degrees or whatever. But the sun, you know, beaten down, fourth match in 3 days. And for whatever reason, I just lose focus. And he starts eliminating all mistakes. The guy didn't double fault the whole match. And he just played super clean tennis. And folks, your boy just couldn't get any. Everything was missing. I mean, we would have 20-shot rallies. He was doing basically my game. Just keep it in. Keep it in, keep it in. Don't make mistakes. Keep it in. Hit it right to the guy. Who cares? Who cares? I'm not going for winners. But then he started doing like moonball returns. on like the 20th exchange of the hit, of the volley. And I'm like, what the hell? So I started to try to smash them to put them away. Because I'm like, I'm up 4-1. And I just started missing them. And it snowballed. And next thing I know, it's 4-4. And you know what I did in the first match? I was leading in the second set 4-1, and the guy scores three. He wins three straight games, and I go to the bathroom. I read this story about Djokovic, how he would go to the bathroom when his opponent had like a heavy momentum, and it would just like chill and relax and slow things down. And I just, I was so stunned that he won three straight, I forgot to use the bathroom ploy. So then I lose the fifth game in deuce. And I lose the sixth in deuce. And at that point, I'm just crestfallen. He's won five straight. I lose at 6-4. And then it snowballs into the second set. I had another buddy and his wife showed up because the wife was playing. And their tennis coach, who I know, coached my son in soccer, played soccer with me. And I'm just like, I'm just resigned. Like, I lost the first set. I hadn't lost a set in the entire tournament. Three straight wins, hadn't lost a set. And it was devastating. And he goes up 5-1. And I'm just like, wow, what a punk bitch I am. How did this happen? I was so angry. So then I win a couple, and I'm like, maybe I can make a comeback, and then he wins another deuce. Like, there was no ads. It was just whoever wins the deuce point, and the deuce points were all, like, 25-shot volleys. And he's doing the moonball thing, and I just, you know, I tip my cap. He was better on that day, and I'll maintain, guys, okay? I lost in the semifinals in 2019 to a guy who's definitely better than me. He was playing down. He's a 4-0. I don't know if he entered the tournament because I forgot his name, but he's really good. This guy is just a player. He's not better than me. He did beat me. I bet if we played 10 times, it would be 5-5. I put money on that. It hurt. I don't know if he won the championship because the results have still not been posted online, and I'm not going to email the guy who runs it and be like, who won the championship? I'm a loser. But at any rate, it hurt to lose in the semifinals, and I think I'm going to bite the bullet, take some tennis lessons next year leading up to the tournament. Quickly, before we get to Jay Billis, two things. I saw Wojnarowski said that the Lakers have offered Kuzma and KCP basically to everybody as a package deal. So it sounds like in whatever Kuzma-Schroeder beef there was, the Lakers feel financially their best bet is to keep Schroeder. I personally don't know if I agree. I don't know if they can try to package Kuzma, KCP and Schroeder, and then you have to probably throw in Horton Tucker or a pick or whatever. But I don't know. It doesn't sound like the one name that Woj mentioned was Ricky Rubio. I personally like Rubio. Solid point guard, solid defender. Doesn't take dumb shots. Isn't like a ball hog. Rubio's great. I mean, so a spot up shooter. I mean, he's not like the best shooter in the world, but he's a savvy veteran, knows how to play. You know, this is a guy who was a high school phenom. Teenage phenom in Europe. Came over. He's what now? He's only 30. Turns 31. He didn't shoot well from three last year, 30%. But the year before that was 36. And he kind of alternates good and bad three-point shooting. He shot 30, then 35, 31, 36, 30. So by that theory, he's due for a good year. From deep, but I would take a crack at Rubio. I don't know what he's going to cost. The only other interesting thing that Wojnarowski had said was that the Bulls and the Knicks are basically, he didn't say this, but the allusion to the Bulls and the Knicks are in the mix for everybody, for Kyle Lowry, for Lonzo Ball, for Dennis Schroeder. Like, basically every agent is using the Bulls and the Knicks is, hey, they have cap room. They're going to get my guy. And that to me is silly. I'm sorry, guys. I don't see how Lonzo Ball is a $20 million a year guy. If he's making $20 million a year, he's probably got to be your third or fourth highest player, paid player. And you're not winning anything if Lonzo's your third or fourth highest paid player. You're just not. Yeah, I don't even know if you're a playoff team. So this idea that the Bulls are going to go out and spend or the Knicks, like that is just, I mean, people would rather keep their cap room. I would rather keep my cap room. What if the Wizards, if Beal doesn't leave, and the Wizards start 1-11 or 2-12, Bradley Beal's going to leave. And all of a sudden, you now have cap room because you didn't go out and pay Lonzo Ball, and boom, you can make a run at Bradley Beal or whoever. By the way, though, it doesn't sound like Damian Lillard's getting dealt this week. What happened to he's supposed to demand a trade? Still waiting for it. Not a good start to the Olympics for Damian Lillard, but let's pivot to the draft and bring in my main man, Jay Billis.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome into Straight Fire a guy who knows a little bit about basketball, right? Played at Duke, played internationally, was drafted in the NBA, announces the NBA draft. He's everywhere. Jay Billis. Jay, how are you, man?
Great, Jason. How you doing?
You know, I'd be better if the USA basketball team didn't stink up the joint against France in the fourth quarter. I mean, Jay, you know winning time as much as anyone. I'm stunned that they blew the game and lost it. They were up six in the fourth quarter and then just could not close a door. I can't believe this, Jay.
Yeah, I guess it's a little bit surprising, but given that we've been through, you know, the USA basketball program hasn't been quite the same in the last couple of years. And it's not just the transition, they had COVID and all this stuff. So, and I know the whole world has had that, but, you know, we're putting a team together like we used to, and it's a little bit harder to do it that way. You know, our guys don't play together, like a lot of our competitors do. And everybody now has NBA players. It used to be that just we had them or somebody had one or two, you know, now they've got full rosters of NBA players. So oftentimes the more together team has the best chance to win. So we're not going to out-talent everybody, especially when our overall best players, I mean, we've got some of the best players.
Yeah.
But when you've got, you know, all of our best players are not playing because of the way the season went. And frankly, the ones that are playing, their teams aren't happy that they're playing.
Yeah. There's really not, I mean, other than building your brand on the other side of the world, there's not a ton of upside here. I don't know, Jay, do you think that, you know, the idea of playing for the USA still matters and has the cachet that it did 20, 30 years ago?
Well, I don't know about 20, 30 years ago. I still think it has a great deal of cachet. And I think the players want to play and they want to do well. They wouldn't give up this much time if they didn't want to do well. But it's much more difficult than it seems. And even Kevin Durant, I mean, we're expecting to see the Kevin Durant of 3 years ago. And heck, he was injured most of last year and is coming off an Achilles rupture. So, you know, to me, if I were Brooklyn, I wouldn't be too happy about him playing. I mean, I'm as American as anybody and like to see USA do extraordinarily well. But if I'm Brooklyn, you know, what do you get out of a gold medal? You know, you don't want to risk an asset like Kevin Durant. And at the very least, you know, you're going to get him back. He's not going to be 100% fresh, I would think.
Yeah, total agreement. All right, let's move to the NBA draft. Jay, you've been doing this for years. You know the prospects as well as anybody. You do a lot of college basketball work at ESPN. Great job. The top of this draft is strong, but Jay, when you're drafting for the future, we all agree Cade Cunningham's probably the best prospect right now. But if I'm looking 3 to 5 years down the road, is Cade Cunningham the guy you think who has the highest ceiling of anyone in this draft?
Yes, but there are caveats to that. I mean, you're always drafting. I believe these guys are drafting based upon what's going to be the future. And so you're not necessarily taking the best player now. You're taking the one you think is going to be the best player. And I think most people agree that Cade Cunningham has the chance to be the best player, the best chance to be the best player. But, you know, Jason, this is the best draft, I believe, that I've done since 2003. With LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and those guys. Now, does that mean we're going to have 4 or 5 Hall of Famers out of the top 10? I'm unwilling to say that in any year, but I feel that this is the deepest and strongest draft, both at the top and throughout the first round into the second of any draft I've done since that one. And, you know, it's when I say that, though, it's not like I keep a list of here are the best drafts I've done in order. But this is as excited I've been for a draft because of the quality talent, and you're going to have a number of different decisions that are going to be made. I don't think there'll be a lot of hand wringing over number one with Detroit, but you know, 2 through 10, you're going to have a bunch of decisions where, you know, people could reasonably differ and you're not going to pound the table going, are you nuts? They're all reasonable. It's kind of like, if you go back to 2003 and you say, okay, if you were sitting at number 4, and you had Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade on the board. I mean, who's going to argue that?
Right.
You know, you take one or the other and you're pretty happy with what you got. You're not going to second guess that, and nobody's going to call you an idiot.
I just wonder, because, you know, of the way the draft has shaken out in recent years, and there have been some struggles at the top, you know, guys who are going 1-2 don't always become the best player 3-4 years down the road. Do you think teams are looking at the draft differently, the way the league has kind of shifted to be very wing dominant in the last few years?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think we've seen where it would be a no-brainer for a big guy to go number one in years past, maybe a decade ago. I mean, I think I voiced that a little bit last year with James Wiseman, saying, you know, 10 years ago, James Wiseman would have been a no-brainer number one. And that's probably true this year of Evan Mobley of USC. Yeah. You can make that argument. So, yeah, I think it has changed. What hasn't changed is, you know, I believe that, and I haven't done all the numbers on this, it's just more anecdotal, but I think the success rate of NBA draft picks is the highest of any draft in major sports. That, you know, and I may have to leave hockey out of that because I you know, I follow it, but I don't know as much about it. But, you know, you look at football, they're looking at these guys for 4 and 5 years, and they swing and miss like crazy on quarterbacks and all different kind of things, you know. And NBA people have a year to look at some of these prospects, year and a half. And for the most part, they nail it. There are mistakes. Of course, mistakes are made here and there, but that's just the nature of sports.
What do you make of this whole the G League players that are near the top, Jalen Green, Kuminga? You know, I didn't watch a ton of the G League myself, but you can easily go on YouTube and watch the highlights. The competition level does look a bit above Division One. I would not say that it's the level of like Luka Doncic playing grown men in Europe. But how do you know, say, hey, Cade Cunningham tore up the Big 12, but Jalen Green was beating former and future pros in the G League?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, I think it is better than college overall because of the quality of competition and the fact that you've got, you know, elite professional athletes that are knocking on the NBA door. You know, as to how it compares to Europe, I haven't really, really thought about that one. But it's the different – the one thing that we kind of have to wrap our heads around, it's been an adjustment for me, especially the first adjustment was years ago when high school players started coming in. You know, you immediately said, well, they're not ready. And it turned out a lot of them were, not all of them were, but a lot of them were. And so you had to get used to that odd idea, you know. And the first thing you hear people say, like a guy might not be drafted high, they'll say, hey, he's going to be in the G League next year, as if that's some negative. It's not a negative. It's just a question of where you want to do your developing. Players can develop faster in the G League than they can in college in a lot of instances. It's just we don't see it. Because we're watching the college game. We're watching what's readily available. So I think Green will probably – there's a very good chance he goes number two. He was ranked ahead of Cade Cunningham in high school. Not by much, but he was. And Kuminga is really intriguing because he's so athletic and can guard multiple spots. And, you know, his potential is really high. You know, but he could go number eight. He could go number five. I don't know exactly what's going to happen with him. But most people haven't seen him because they don't watch the G League. But they better get used to it because they're going to be more really good players that go into it from here.
I saw Trae Young in the playoffs become a guy that I personally did not think he could be coming out of Oklahoma. I didn't think he was dropping 48 points on the Bucks in game one. Nothing like that. And we saw Ja Morant exploding. He had 40-plus against the Jazz. I just – these guys who can handle the ball and just get to the rim and score at will – it feels like Jalen Green is kind of sort of in that mold. But again, I haven't seen enough of him. Is there anyone else in this draft that has that kind of upside where it's like, oh, you know, wings are nice, but guards can get buckets as well as anybody?
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of guys. You know, Jalen Suggs is one of them from Gonzaga. In other years, he would be considered the top pick. Not in every other year, but in some other years he would be. And, you know, James Bouknight can get buckets. Cam Thomas of LSU, Moses Moody of Arkansas. That shows the strength of the draft is, you know, you could wind up in the middle of the first round and get a guy that you're going, oh, how come he didn't go in the top six or seven? And then, you know, you got some of these wings, whether it's Keon Johnson, who's a great defender, Scotty Barnes, who can play point at 6'9". You know, he could go number four. I don't know exactly where he's going to go. And to your point about guards, Davion Mitchell, I think, is a top five player in this draft. other people have him at 7 or 8 or whatever, but that's not worth arguing too much about. But he's not going to fail in the NBA. He's going to be a really good player just because of his will and his explosiveness, his ability to defend on the ball. He's the best on-ball defender in the draft.
I do wonder about the situation. You mentioned Scottie Barnes. We just saw Ben Simmons, and I'm a big fan of Ben Simmons' work, flame out of the playoffs because he didn't want to shoot the basketball. And, you know, Scottie Barnes has had his offensive issues, not a really good shooter, I think 27% from deep. Great at everything else. He's got the wingspan, which you love. But will there be some reluctance to go high on Barnes because he's not a shooter in a league that is very offensive heavy right now?
Well, it depends on what else is available. You know, if you're taking him to be a defender, facilitator, you know, sort of a Scottie Pippen type player. I mean, I don't think people thought Scottie Pippen was a great shooter when he got drafted. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that that Scottie Barnes doesn't have a long way to go. He does, but he's 19. And I do think he can work on it and get a lot better. I don't ever see him being a, you know, primary scorer on a team because that's not his personality. But I do think, I mean, I already think he's, I was surprised that Simmons didn't become a better shooter to the point where it seems like he's got the yips now. He's afraid to shoot. And I didn't see that coming. You know, it's funny. I've heard people lately say, oh, yeah, I knew that. And I'm like, well, how come he didn't say it at the time? Like, nobody said that at the time.
Yeah.
And he was the number one overall pick. And I still think he's worthy of that because of all the other things he does. Your question, you're talking more about championship caliber play, but he's still an all-star and, you know, gets you the playoffs guy. Barnes is just different in that regard. But he's got another guy with a high ceiling. What a great young man and a great teammate. He's not going to be a pain in the ass and he's not going to demand special treatment or anything like that. He's not that type of player.
Let's go to kind of a controversial player, Jalen Johnson, the kid out of Duke. I personally like the skill set, but as everybody points out, nobody quits on Duke and Coach K. He bounced around to multiple high schools. How do you handicap a guy like that? I don't know if you've interviewed him or not, but you know, what do you make of Jalen Johnson? Does he need the right cultural fit, like a Spurs organization? Whereas if he goes to, I don't know, the Rockets or what have you, it could be a disaster.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the fit as much as him. I think he's a top. I agree with you. I think he's a top 10 talent, and I've got him ranked to the top 10 as a player. Now, was I concerned about the fact that he, you know, sort of quit in the middle of the season or just toward the end of the season? Yeah, that bothered me, but it wasn't like a disqualifying thing. You know, it was a pandemic year. Duke was really struggling. He was struggling, so I kind of give him a little bit of slack there. But and some of these players, Jason, you know, they have anxiety issues. I mean, it was difficult last year because all these guys are, you know, they were quarantined the whole year. And, you know, people want to say, hey, they got to do what they love and all that nonsense. They stayed in a hotel the whole year.
That's not fun.
It sucked. It sucked. And, you know, I was quarantined at the for a few days at the Mohegan Sun bubble at the start of the year. And I wanted to hop out the window. I wanted no part of that. And, you know, you had food delivered to your room and all that. You're treated well, but it was awful.
And that was just one weekend, right?
That was 1 week, you know, and these guys were doing it the whole year. So I'm not trying to make excuses for Johnson. I mean, I would have counseled that he didn't quit. And my advice, but nobody asked me, my advice would have been, you can explain not playing well through a pandemic year. You cannot, you'll have a harder time explaining packing up and walking out. And that's what he's dealing with, you know, and to your point, like I get the four high schools thing, but nobody had a problem with that when he was being recruited. You know, everybody knew that at the time. It's just sort of when you pile this other thing on, we're starting to ask all these other questions and they're fair questions. I'm not saying they're not fair, but there are a whole bunch of guys that are going to multiple high schools now that we're talking about being great guys. And Johnson's having to deal with these issues. And, you know, part of it's self-inflicted, and part of it was unfair. Some of the stuff he had to deal with right when he walked was a bit unfair, I felt, but that's part of the gig, part of the deal.
Yeah.
But his game, he's really talented and he can, he's great in transition. He's a really good passer. You know, he rebounds his position. He can grab and go. I still think he needs to be a tougher defender and he needs to be able to shoot the ball better. He doesn't shoot it great. He shoots it okay. but he doesn't shoot it great, and he needs to work on that. But you know, to our earlier discussion, he's 19.
Yeah.
And he's going to get better. But at some point, I look at it a little bit like Michael Porter Jr., even though his issue was a back injury. At some point, whether it's 12, 15, you're going to go, I don't care why he quit. He's too good to turn down here.
Yeah.
That's going to be the issue.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
You mentioned Davion Mitchell earlier, Baylor guard. He's 22 years old. The history of 22-year-olds in the lottery is not pretty. I don't have it in front of me, but you just look at the names, and it's guys who haven't really delivered. Chris Duarte out of Oregon is another guy. I like him a lot. He looks ready-made to play. You know, I'm sure you talk to teams about this, but why is there such an aversion to 22- or 24-year-old guys in the lottery? Is it simply because they're already a ready-made product and maybe they've already been maxed out and there's no ceiling, whereas a Jalen Green or Zaire Williams from Stanford only played 13 games. We don't know how good he can be. Like, why is there like an ageism going on in the lottery?
I think it's your first point that their ceiling isn't as high, that they've established essentially who they are, not that they can't get better, or I think your term was maxed out. I mean, no, I'm a lot older than you, but when I was coming out of college, everybody was a senior and everybody was 22 and nobody, you know, and you were considered a rookie that had a lot to learn and, you know, had a lot of developing to do so you could be a quality player in the league, all that stuff. That's not discussed now. Now it's sort of, you know, what value is there beyond what we see? Like, what potential do you have? And mistakes are made there too. But I hadn't noticed or hadn't internalized sort of the, you know, 22, 23 year old issue in the lottery. But how far that goes back. But Mitchell is one of those guys, like, I just don't see him failing. He's not going to fail. He's relentless and he really wants it. And he's so talented on defense and, you know, his explosion to the rim, when he blows by you, he gets to the rim quicker than a shot blocker can get there to wipe it away. So I feel very comfortable with him in the top five. And heck, if I were Golden State drafting at number seven,
wow.
The tough decision would be if Golden State had him and Scottie Barnes both on the board. What do you do with that? Who knows? They may trade it to get an older player, but, I would look first at Mitchell.
So you mentioned when you were coming out, you know, everybody was there 3-4 years. They were mature. And, you know, what they say about college is like when you go into the real world to get a job, you got into a college, then you started it and you graduated. Boy, this is a guy who's going to stick with it and he's willing to go the long distance. Like, we want this guy on our team. It's a little different now in the NBA draft because, like, people played literally 15 to 17 to 25 games and that's it. We don't really know that much mentally about some of these young guys. It feels like the risk is just so great, Jay, does it not?
Yeah, but the players are more mature now. I mean, I was talking to somebody recently. I think we were on a conference call with Mike Schmitz, who's the best talent evaluator I know. And we were talking about how few, or maybe it was Brendan Sir also. We were talking about how few players we really talk about having issues now, like character issues or, you know, the buzzword character issues. There are so few players that you're talking about that you're not saying what a great kid, what a really good young man. You know, back when guys stuck around for 4 years, it wasn't because we were good guys. It was because there was no other choice and there was nowhere else to go. There was no money available. You're not going to go overseas back then. So back then you had guys that were drafted at 22 that had no maturity at all. And not all of them, some. That had very little maturity and they were a huge pain in the ass. But today I think the players are more focused on this as a career from a younger age. And I think they're more prepared to take the step than in the past. That's not true of everybody, but generally across the board, you're seeing a more professional approach to their career now than ever. And, you know, they take better care of their bodies. Their nutrition is better. Now that's ratcheted up in college, period. They learn more in college than they used to on that front. Because college is pro now. It's so professional in its approach.
Basically, yeah.
So I think the risk is, you know, you certainly don't want to miss on somebody and you know, haven't done your due diligence and you find out later on that the guy was a complete zero. That can happen, or didn't have the mental makeup to be successful, wasn't a worker, stuff like that. That can happen. But really all I believe they're doing is trying to make the best decision of is this guy better than that guy? Like we got a list of five guys here, you know, who's number one on the list? Like drafting shouldn't be that hard. Once you get to the draft, you got a list of guys and you need to be disciplined. If you've made your decisions going down that list, the only problem that you see sometimes is you'll see somebody on your list going, well, how come he didn't get taken already? Wait a minute now.
What are we missing?
what do we need to know that other people seem to know right now? And that's where the, you know, people get scared a little bit in the draft. They're going, well, let's not take the chance. If maybe somebody else does know something if they passed up on this guy.
Let's wrap up with, you know, a question about workouts. So I'm out here in LA and I have met enough guys that I've been able to go into a couple workouts, and you go and see like a Wendell Carter working out for teams and you're like, oh my gosh, this guy's ridiculous. And then you go back and watch some of the games on YouTube and it doesn't totally match up with the workout. Another guy, Jaylen Brown, was out here and it was just like, this guy's unbelievable. Oh my gosh. And then you go and look and he was like, he was all right at Cal. A guy that has killed in workouts right now is James Bouknight, the kid from UConn. By all accounts, he had one of the best shooting workouts ever. And then you go look and you're like, oh, he hit 29% from three and takes a lot of bad shots. I know he wasn't on a great team. Jay, how do you decipher between a guy who looks incredible in a workout and a guy who, you know, on the court maybe didn't deliver like he did in a workout? How do you determine between the two?
Well, that's a really good point, because you can get fooled by workouts, and I've been fooled in the past by them, and I'll probably be fooled again in the future. One of the, you know, it's 5-on-5 game, and your productivity is a better indicator of your ability level in a 5-on-5 game. But for Bouknight, who, you're right, did not shoot the best percentage, especially in catch and shoot situations, but he is a bucket getter, he can go get his own. And he shoots it very well off the dribble. So that was an issue, you know, and it's been brought up with them. Like, you haven't shot a great off catch and shoot situation. So when you see him in a workout going, he can shoot it, that's not an issue. It's not like he's clanging it off the rim. There's nothing wrong there. And as he continues to get older and better, he's going to continue to improve in that, improving his shot prep and all those things. All those things can be improved, but he's got the ability level now. So seeing that, that's really helpful. Now, if you're you know, looking at somebody in a workout and you get, I'll give you a little story about a workout. So Chip England, who's with the San Antonio Spurs, and I think the best shooting coach in the game.
Shot doctor, right? He saved Kawhi Leonard or whatever?
Yeah, he gets the credit for that and should. But so Chip was a teammate of mine in college. We're great friends, and there's not a better guy on the planet than Chip. So when he advised Corey Maggette when he came out of college in 1999, I think it was 99, 2000, whatever. And if you remember Corey Maggette, just a superior athlete and, you know, body like Adonis. But he wasn't the most skilled player after his freshman year. So Chip told them, look, if you get into a workout and you know, you get on a bad shooting streak, or, you know, you're making some mistakes and you don't feel comfortable, pause the workout for a second. He goes, leave your gym bag in front of where the scouts are sitting over in the stands, and go over right in front of them and take your shirt off. And then go back. And he goes, nobody's going to care that you missed a couple shots when they see that.
Yeah. Oh man.
But it goes to the Moneyball example of, you know, if you see, I'm sure you read that book. I mean, if you see a guy hit a 500 foot home run, you know, you're going to be influenced by that rather than how many times did he get on base or things like that. And so you have to, I think there's an art to it about being disciplined for draft decision makers. You have to look at everything and not get seduced by athleticism or seduced by a workout, or not to overly worry about, well, the guy didn't have the best year, but man, he's got every tool, but hey, he didn't have a great year.
Yeah.
You know, there are a bunch of different ways to screw this draft up, and you can kind of take your pick on it.
I love the Tyreek Evans story. He was in the Steph Curry workout and the Kings had him play one-on-one, and Tyreek Evans destroyed Steph Curry, and the Kings were like, we got our guy. That's Tyreek Evans is our guy. He wins Rookie of the Year, but obviously, like, that's a terrible matchup for Curry, right? I mean, he's not a one-on-one guy. He's not going to defend Tyreek Evans. And we know how that story ended. But would you recommend a lot of these guys play one-on-one in workouts, or just there's no real upside if you get beat or what have you?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, you know, playing one-on-one is not going to be career determinative.
Yeah.
It's just going to be where you get drafted. So if you're worried about, you know, I mean, maybe Steph Curry is still shedding a tear over going 7 versus number 3. I don't think he's too worried about it. But you know, your long-term career is what's important. So, you know, I'm kind of on the fence about what to do at the combine. You know, so you go have a great day at the combine. Like Dante DiVincenzo has a great day at the combine. He's getting advice to shut it down. He said, screw it, I'm here. I'm going to play.
Yeah.
And plays day number 2 and plays even better. And got taken in the top 20 or whatever he was taken.
Yeah.
And this year you have you have players that played really well the first day and they shut it down on day 2.
I think the kid from Kentucky, right? Jackson, the big guy.
I don't think Jackson played at all. I was there, but I might not have paid attention to that. But the guy I was thinking about most is Bones Highland of VCU. So really good first day. And you're thinking, wow, can't wait to see him again tomorrow. And you know, you're standing there on the set with our crew and LaFonso Ellis and I are going, you think he shows up tomorrow? You think he plays? And we're like, probably not.
Wow.
But you know, so we can, as old men, sit there going, hey, we want to see him play. Come on, man, show your competitor, all that kind of crap. But he probably made the right decision as far as getting drafted because, you know, playing or not playing is not going to be career determinative for him. It's just a question of does it help his draft selection status?
Guaranteed money. All right, Jay Billis, the draft Thursday night, right? Thursday night ESPN, you fired up or?
I'm fired
kind
up.
Kind of? Or?
No, I'm really excited about the draft. I'm just a little bit concerned about, you know, 5 hours. I'm going to have to manage my fluid intake so I don't have to run off the set to go to take a leak. You know, that as I get older, that's becoming more and more of a thing.
Yes, obviously. Jay, but what are you, 45 now, 50, getting up there?
Yeah, I'm a little older than that. I'm
I know. I remember watching you at Duke dominate the Never Nervous Purvis Final Four, right? Oh, that was 86?
Actually, I got dominated.
I remember watching that game. Yeah, I was not a Louisville fan. Yeah, anyways. All right, Jay Billis, thanks a lot, man. Enjoy the week, and we'll see you at the draft.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you.